Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. Not just any day though, a Friday, which means we once again have Brett Ehrlich, the host of Happy Half Hour. Brett, how's it going?
I realized I had it switched headphones, so I decided to lean into this. Welcome to the Damage Report. I'm Lobot to John's Lando. I just sit here until he's done talking and then I wake up and do my job.
That's the job. What percentage of the audience knows who or what Lobot is? That's the question I ask you, America.
This
anyway.
Is
I know. I'm aware.
I'm just telling them. For those listening to the podcast, he is he lives anyway in the Cloud City with Lando, and he just wakes up and walks to deal with stormtroopers.
An argument can be made that we have gone too deep into Star Wars canon this early into our political analysis show, but anyway, maybe not far enough. Maybe not. Should we talk about the Black Sun Syndicate? Should we? Anyway, we're gonna talk about a lot of stuff today, but I am most excited, assuming that you're watching our full show. So apology to the podcasters, definitely look up the clips on the YouTube channel. Today is not just the day where we have Brett Ehrlich, today is also the day where we throw away our garbage people of the week. And so in regards to that, let's do two things. One, let's get our totally necessary prop.
Here's a tacit. Here's a
we got a garbage.
A tacit admission. He forgot to do that before the show started.
Well, that is true, but also I like doing it on the show. The second part though is that there is still time for you to vote for the community garbage horse of the week. Did you know that every week our audience gets to choose one person that goes in here? And I have no power to contradict you. Whoever you choose goes in. So you can go to youtube.com/thedamagereport, go to the community tab, and there will be a post where you can vote. And we shall see together who is the garbagiest of the garbage. And there's a lot of other stuff that we're gonna get to too. Some crazy videos. Elon Musk finally had his Twitter town hall. Ted Cruz has thoughts about the genitalia of animated toys. So buckle up everyone, hold on to your butts as we launch into this. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button so that people get their notifications and everything, that would be great. You could help us out in that way. And you can send us tweets, comments, super chats and all that, and we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Brett, are you ready to talk about some news?
Yes, I am. And just as a disclaimer, I was up very late last night because I just planned on catching the highlights of the devastating Celtics loss. Sorry to the TD Craig, who somehow was born in California, but due to the fact that he's got like reddish hair and beard, he feels he has to support the the Celtics. But I'm happy that the Lakers and Celtics have the same amount of championships still. Thank God.
Well, Brett, I'm going to expect the same level of energy following your night watching basketball as I brought all week after a full week of late nights playing No Man's Sky. So if I can do that, I expect it out of you. Yeah. Anyway, with that said,
I didn't finish the thought. I ended up watching the whole broadcast, went to bed at about 3:00, the rebroadcast at like 1:00 in the morning. So I hope the analysis is okay.
That's such a terrible idea. My analysis of the state of your life is not okay. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna begin talking about January 6th and not any more basketball. I wanna have a little bit of a discussion about the evidence that's been presented. How likely is it to turn into an actual like criminal penalties? But our starting off point is gonna be, I thought, a fun back and forth between Don Lemon and CNN analyst Phil Mudd. So let's jump directly into that video.
I'm not saying that the case is the wrong thing. I'm saying if you're at the Department of Justice, the likelihood you win that case is low. The risk of losing that case is high. I wouldn't pursue it if I were the attorney general.
Even if people are telling you what they thought and that they're telling you that they were inspired
the president's going to say, my advisors told me I won. I thought I won. That wasn't a conspiracy.
None of his advisors told him he won.
Don, you've got to go not to the court of public opinion, but to the court of law.
No. Hold on. You're not hearing what I'm saying.
I'm hearing
every single person who testified, his advisors told him, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying on this one, you're wrong. Every single advisor told him that he lost.
No, the only people who told him that he won
was Rudy Giuliani voting box people.
Don't you think the defense can find witnesses who said the president thought that he won? Come on, Don. The defense is going to find people who said the president believed he was right. How can this be a conspiracy if the president said he was trying to defend democracy?
Okay, so at the end of the day, what Phil Mudd thinks about the DOJ or Trump or whatever doesn't necessarily matter, especially considering that at an earlier point in his discussion with Don Lemon, he said that he was thus far not convinced that Trump was willing to see violence if that's what took him to stay in office, when that's, I mean, it's been a year and a half of not only the fact that he sent the people to riot, but also was openly talking about the potential death of Mike Pence. So let's dispense with that. But I think it's an interesting debate, though, about is this something you could actually prove? If the point that we've reached in America is that whether Trump can potentially go to jail or not is based on whether people believe his, what is being called the George Costanza defense, that it's not a lie if you believe it. Basically, that's where Trump's at. So that is, if that's where we're at, that is a difficult thing to prove. That said, as Don Lemon points out, many of his advisors have come forward and said that they were very clear to him that he had not actually won. At a certain point, Brett, how much should you have to, or do you have to prove that a person is sort of being willfully ignorant? And is this worth picking up, considering that it might be difficult to actually prove? And if you were, and by the way, really fast, and if they were to pick it up and they didn't prove it and he was exonerated, that could end up making him look better than if you didn't pursue it at all.
Yes, I agree with that last part. You could end up doing what, you know, giving them the opportunity. Well, basically, it used to be the situation where if someone was impeached, that was a bad thing for them.
Yeah.
And that's not the case anymore. Because, and the reason that that's not a bad thing anymore hinges on the, and that they still go through with it, hinges on the fact that Don Lemon is like most people. Most people are like, hear a what seems like a prosecution go on during the hearings, hear a complete case front to back, and say what a lot of us have been saying for years, and a lot of moderates as well have been saying, this guy did something illegal, right? But as Mudd points out, no, that's not necessarily what you can get him on. What I think we should hope for is there was a moment where knowingly Donald Trump lied to the American public about what Mike Pence's actual position on the election was. So he knowingly did libel or whatever. He impugned the character of Mike Pence. So I'm hoping we can have some kind of Johnny Depp, Amber Heard style civil suit about defamation of character, where Donald Trump misrepresented Mike Pence's position.
Let's go really fast because you mentioned that. So let's jump to graphic two. Greg Jacob, who was legal counsel for the former vice president, said that Pence's team was, quote, shocked and disappointed that Trump put out a categorically untrue statement the day before the insurrection, saying that the president and vice president were in total agreement that Pence had the power to overturn the election. And really fast on that, like, Phil Mudd can say that maybe they can find somebody who can come in and say that they thought that Trump had won. So maybe some advisors are saying he lost, some were saying that he won. But he definitely knew that Pence had said that Pence can't overturn the election, and he lied about it. And he continued to advocate for it in the speech that sent people to the Capitol. That might be harder to weasel out of.
The reason for the hearing is hope, sadly. It's hope that just telling the American people what happened will inspire in enough decent human Americans, it'll inspire them to say, I think Donald Trump should never be anywhere close to the White House. And when it comes time to vote for that, that's where it will play out. And that's the only thing that any reasonable person should be holding out hope for, realistically. That's why this is happening. That's why it's playing out the way it is, how it is, and when it is, and in the modes that it's playing out in. But there's definitely like one massive apparatus that's keeping anyone from hearing about it and talking trash about it. But if you watch those hearings in their entirety, which you can do when they're happening. We're streaming specials every time a hearing happens and reacting to it on the spot. You know for a fact that there's no, like, Donald Trump did something that is hateful and hostile toward the concept of America. And all the people that are kind of footing around and trying to get to that point where they're like, I'm not quite sure. I think I should advocate for anything other than holding together the institution of democracy in America. They're making a point, but they're not making the point. The most important thing right now is that Donald Trump is the single biggest threat to America. Because he just proved, and as we're hearing in great detail with photos John's gonna show you, he got to the point where every other person in the history of America who's lost those elections has said, I lost, this is America, we peacefully transfer power. Every reasonable person did that. But Donald Trump literally said, wouldn't it be cool if we went full coup?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's the only point.
I mean, I want to show you one image. This is pretty crazy. I saw this going around yesterday. This is back on Graphic One. Apologies to the director. This is Mike Pence, almost as if it was staged, holding up a phone. That is him watching in real time the video that Trump finally begrudgingly posted, where he told the people who were at that moment trying to murder Mike Pence that I love you. You're very special people. And Mike Pence at this point had already declined to leave with Secret Service. And it's not incredibly clear why. Apparently, there's the idea that he was worried that if he left, that he wasn't sure what would happen to the process and maybe they would find some way to overturn it, or that he didn't know the agents who were going to be taking him away. The entire thing is scary. That is the state that the vice president was in. And I know that in some ways, Mike Pence has been forced to move past this. He clearly doesn't like Trump anymore, but anyone else would be making a way bigger deal of the fact that the guy you used to work for was perfectly fine with a mob murdering you. But that image is so crazy, because at that moment, he had no idea what was going to happen to him or to his country. And Trump was trying to maintain the affections of his murderous mob. That was his priority. And I want to go to just a couple of numbers, because you know, we can debate how likely the case to get Trump would be to actually work. In terms of what people think about it, according to new research from Navigator Research, 54% of respondents back the idea of the DOJ indicting Trump over the insurrection. 37% opposed it. And obviously, you're not going to be surprised to find out there are big partisan differences, with 71% of Republicans opposed, 21% support the idea. More than a fifth of Republicans want Trump to be, now maybe some of them think it would be so that he could clear his name or something, I don't know. But that's a high number. 86% of Democrats, 47% of independents also want him to be indicted. So, I mean, it would be difficult, honestly, but the stakes are also incredibly high. So Brett, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know what the next section of this is, but just very quickly.
We're going to be moving on to John Eastman in a little bit, but give me your thoughts about this.
So this is all based on the concept that the right wing takes a very real concern that any reasonable person could have. This is their move, right? One of the many, but they take a real concern a reasonable person could have and start just hammering that idea home. That is terrible what's happening in this very specific instance. But then over time, they use the same term and broaden its definition so it applies to everything. In this in this specific situation, it's the news media and American institutions like the Congress. So essentially what they do is they say, listen, most people want this kind of policy, but Congress never makes it happen. You hate it. They broaden that definition to mean that every American institution of democracy is wrong and broken and rigged against you. In doing so, there is an admission from Trump's own legal team that he knows he would lose in the Supreme Court 9-0 if he tried to do this. But he very brazenly says, wouldn't it be cool if we, you know, just let's take a leap of faith and believe that we've broadened the definition of America's institutions are broken, to include something that provably, by all accounts of all reasonable people, is not broken. And that's the leap of faith they were going to take. But sadly, that leap of faith is into an abyss of anarchy, lawlessness, and the absolute dissolution of what America should be, period. They did that. And the other part was the news media, where they're like, well, we'll just say like fake news, everything's fake news. And they lump that and it's rigged and America's broken into it. But they say they want to make America great again, but they're just going to unmake America. That's what it is, period.
Yeah. Certainly in any form that we would recognize. Okay, let's move on, because I want to talk about Eastman. We also have to talk about Giuliani. So let's get through Eastman in a reasonable amount of time. We've been waiting to find out more about the people who had apparently requested a pardon from Donald Trump after what happened on January 6th. And the stakes are high in that, because anyone doing so appears to be communicating that they knew that either they had committed some illegal act, or at least a plausible case could be made that they had. So another name can apparently be added to that list, as you'll see in this clip.
Dr. Eastman's email stated, quote, "I've decided that I should be on the pardon list, if that is still in the works." Dr. Eastman did not receive his presidential pardon.
That's a shame. So that's a former White House lawyer, John Eastman, who, you know, as with others like Sidney Powell, was tied up with so much of the effort to overturn the election. And one of the things he wanted to coming out of the Trump presidency as like a going away president was a pardon. For what specifically, we don't know. Maybe it wasn't intended to be specific. Maybe it was supposed to be just a pardon for anything having to do with the election. And he could make the case, if he actually admitted to this and he had not come forward and done so, that he was just worried about a witch hunt. It wasn't about any actual crimes that had been committed. But okay, well, we can find out what the American people think about that, about Congress people and lawyers who had been asking for pardons, whether they got them or not. Brett, what do you think?
I mean, all of that is true. It is true that Eastman knew what he's doing. He admitted that what he was doing would lose in the Supreme Court. 9-0. All the White House lawyers, they all thought that. He was kind of speaking for any reasonable person. Something that Pence said they should all belong in a rubber room, because these are the ideas that they're coming up with. And it is true that that's just the dominant strategy for someone working for Trump, is that you would seek a pardon, because you know that you have kind of, I guess here's an interesting way to put it, right? Normally, they would just think, all right, I'm just doing lawyer stuff. There's no way I'd be in trouble. I'm just being a lawyer. I'm just advocating on the part of the, like, what my interpretation of the law is. But even a scum-sucking lawyer like this dude was like, what I'm doing is so evil and obviously wrong. And there's recording devices and people here who I know, as soon as the wind blows the other way, are gonna rat me out. So even then, he's like, I need a ultimate get out of jail free card.
Yep.
And afterwards, they know that they'll just spin it as, oh, I've used the witch hunt card before, and baked into this idea that if you ask people if there's criminal activity going on, they're just doing a calculus. Am I a small enough fish to you know, throw in, you know, to fry?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got to be worried that, like, perhaps he's not influential enough to evade consequences in the way that like a Trump would.
Yeah.
We'll see. But what I did find interesting too, though, yesterday was revealed that he apparently did respond to the question that we've been asking the proponents of the big lie from the very beginning. If you think Pence could have overturned the election, doesn't that conceivably apply to other VPs? And you'll be surprised by now, he doesn't actually think so.
He had come into that meeting trying to persuade us that there was some validity to his theory. I viewed it as my objective to persuade him to acknowledge he was just wrong. And I thought this had to be one of the most powerful arguments. I mean, John, back in 2000, you weren't jumping up and saying Al Gore had this authority to do that. You would not want Kamala Harris to be able to exercise that kind of authority in 2024, when I hope Republicans will win the election. And I know you hope that too, John. And he said, absolutely, Al Gore did not have a basis to do it in 2000. Kamala Harris shouldn't be able to do it in 2024, but I think you should do it today.
And that is so revelatory, like especially because they gave him the two comparisons. Now, he might say, well, wait, I'm not saying that Al Gore couldn't have done it constitutionally. I said he doesn't have the basis to do it, like there's no cause. Okay, fine, that might be what you meant about Al Gore. But when it's looking forward to Kamala Harris, he just said she shouldn't be allowed to do it. That's not that there's not good cause. We don't know. This is a hypothetical. This is in the future. It's just that, look, it is exactly what we think it was. And us saying that they should be asked the question isn't because we think they will finally crumble against that indisputable hypocrisy. It is just that, it's hypocrisy. They're not saying that Pence could have done it because they think he actually could have and Kamala Harris shouldn't be able to because she actually can't. They want to be in power and they will say literally anything that is necessary to do so. There is nothing more substantive or tethered to reality to it than that. It has nothing to do with the law, with constitution, with ethics, with like consistency, nothing. They just liked the idea that Trump would still be president.
Yeah, the framers did a good job designing America so that they could stop Donald Trump from what they stopped him from doing. Mm-hmm. That is a success. So much of our government is to stop bad people from doing bad things, because it would just take so many bad people to completely corrupt the government. Just the way that it's like, you know, cantilevered or whatever, like everybody's like weighed against each other. You have to get so many people agreeing. Like the Polish government's the only one that needs that much more agreement to do anything back before the World War II. Like they literally, you had to have unanimous agreement in the Duma or whatever, or whatever their parliament was. Like it takes so much. And when they designed America's system, they did it in a way that explicitly forbids Donald Trump from doing that. And what's interesting about, just let's take it and put it in terms that, you know, any human being could understand. In comparison between Al Gore and Mike Pence, if for those two things to be remotely similar, even, you would need a situation where Bo Biden is still alive and he is the governor of Pennsylvania. And Jill Biden, or, you know, Joe Biden's brother is the governor of Georgia. Like that's how corrupt it was. George Bush's brother was the governor of Florida at the time, and all the weird, sketchy stuff that we found out actually did happen was happening in Florida.
Yeah.
And do you think for a second, so those are the two, like, what if the shoe's on the other foot kind of thing. It's on the one hand, it would take so much more corruption in all those states, all of which are Republican, and said, no, it's fine. Donald Trump lost. And then, yeah, it's, and then to look and say, yeah, okay, so next time Kamala Harris can literally be caught on tape saying, yeah, wouldn't it be cool if we just made up a bunch of corruption that didn't actually happen and decided that we're president again and also we're king? Like that's what Trump's looking for. And that's what I can't believe set in. And Fox News is so desperate for ratings that they will throw all of America out just so that they can, you know, suck up to Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Ratings and the political power that in theory their dominance will bring with the Republican Party, I think. That said, we need to take our first break. We come back though. Elon Musk finally had his big town hall that was intended to allay the concerns of Twitter employees. We're going to figure out whether that happened or not after this. Of course, he found the backstory for Lobot. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into the insanity. Look, I want a week where there's no Elon Musk news, but now there's three pieces of it. At least most of it is embarrassing or bad news for him. We've got that going for us. Elon Musk finally had his big Twitter town hall where he was answering questions from Twitter employees about what it would mean were he to take over. Now, it didn't necessarily go how it was supposed to, at least objectively. I don't know what his own personal objectives were, but the entire thing seems to have been a bit of a debacle. And I love the way that the Daily Beast intros what happened, saying, appearing via a crappy cell phone camera feed, he's a tech CEO. Can someone hook a DSLR up to like a cam link or something for this guy. Anyway, so he talked to them. He has, of course, argued aggressively in favor of free speech principles, but he's a right winger who says the word free speech. So you know where this is going. He only took questions that had been screened in advance, which, look, I understand that you're probably not going to take questions in real time, but you're the dude who's constantly crowing about your commitment to free speech. Anyway, during that, he still found time to go on bizarre tangents discussing aliens, noting that he had dubbed himself the techno king of Tesla. It was pure chaos. And by the way, like if you're the sort of person that thinks like it's cool or funny or a meme that he's the techno king, first of all, you're literally worshiping a character from Succession. Second of all, what the hell is wrong with you? I don't know what the hell is wrong with him, but why do you think that this is cool or fun or interesting or subversive or something like that? It's just he's a very pathetic person who just happens to have a lot of money. That's all this is. Anyway, Twitter employees gave live commentary as well as commentary to news outlets afterward. One told Vox he is demonstrating a dangerous lack of knowledge about technical, policy, and operational matters. Nobody's surprised to find that out, and that he was both confusing and hilarious. I don't know if it was intentionally hilarious or the only normal way that he's ever hilarious, which is inadvertent. Anyway, finally, he signed off of the meeting, and that's when it was revealed, according to a source who talked to Reuters, that his avatar was two hands shaped like the number 69 in an apparent joke about the sexual position. And again, he is very, very funny. He is in tune with pop culture and is a very funny guy with his 69 thing, which is a very cool thing for the potential boss to then reveal to thousands of employees. Anyway, Brett, what do you think?
Listen, okay, so if you work there, just if you're you know, a lady works at freaking Tesla or Twitter and he starts working there, just start aggressively sexually harassing the men who work there in a way that they think is cool. I do think that having just in general, like I say 69 nice all the time whenever someone says 69, so I'm not gonna cast stones.
Is that the exact same thing, the comparison you just made?
Well, I was just gonna say, like in general, but they have
a company that he's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. He's also the CEO, and that's why I'm saying, like, in the same way, just like do a thought experiment. What would it be like if you were, you know, a lady that works there and you just start sexually harassing guys in that way? It's just so stupid, and it's so transparent.
That is more critical thought than he has done in his entire life. That experiment that you just postulated, he has never done even that much, like prospective hypothetical empathizing. In his entire existence.
I don't know much about the guy other than he's a rich guy. And I like to boil things down to what's the simplest. And the simplest way to interpret the fixation on Elon Musk is it's a lot of people who have come to a point where they prioritize being a jerk over everything else. And if you guys listen to my political framework, I will allow, it embraces and encourages you to be a jerk unless it ruin someone's life. That's it. If me saying don't sexually harass people at work ruins your life, like that's a horrible argument. What seems to be a better explanation of Elon Musk is that he seems to have galvanized some speculators in the Bitcoin world. And the Silicon Valley broiness, he's galvanized that. And political operatives are trying to get people to focus on the, hey, this weird definition of free speech they've espoused hypocritically. And in doing so, all they're doing is hilariously saying, we hate Silicon Valley gajillionaires. And our savior is Elon Musk, a Silicon Valley gajillionaire.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. In the same way that they hate Hollywood, and yet they're desperate to have, you know, the guy who played Superman in the 90s on their show, because that's the best that they can do. And they desperately want celebrities.
And the difference is that the left kind of yells at, and I'm just talking about strategy. I'm just talking about tactics. The left yells at the neolib in Silicon Valley about their hypocrisy rather than getting them to vote with the left based on their dislike for anti-LGBT initiatives and those social issues, and just leave it at that and keep them on your side.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the right does better than the left. The left yells at people they need needlessly. What the right does is they just put a bunch of honey out for different people. Here's bait to get you if you're at Silicon Valley, bro. Elon Musk is cool. I'm moving on. They don't, you know, I'm just going to pander to that instinct. I'm not going to call out the fact.
I think that's a thing they do. That's not the only thing that they do.
Oh, I know, but that's one of, I've said another move that they do already on the show.
Sure.
But they just put out freaking bait to get people to vote with them. They don't then, when they get there, shame them for being needless. And I'm only talking strategically. It is terrible to be a hypocrite. It's a sign of tribalism and disingenuousness. But strategically, just put out traps, get people in there. Message in a disciplined manner that doesn't alienate people that you need as allies. It's called messaging. It's very basic and people have just gotten away from it because things like Twitter and social media incentivize you to always be angry and nitpick in a way that's similar, that takes away from important issues that you are trying to draw distinctions in.
On the meeting, people wanted to know if he was going to fire people. If he took over, he wouldn't say. He's an incredibly wealthy prospective CEO. Yes, he's probably going to fire a bunch of people. That's definitely the case. He either pretended to still be mad about bots or is actually weirdly mad about bots. I don't know which is more pathetic. I don't know. People wanted to know if they're going to be forced to come in rather than work remotely. He made no guarantees, though he did say that, quote, exceptional workers would retain flexibility. So I'm assuming it'd be the same thing as Tesla. And by the way, these concerns over things like, what does it mean that he has the 69 avatar? Or what about like the free speech thing? These are like, he will present in the same way that the Kraken CEO, the crypto bro did, that this is needless distractions from the core concerns of the company. But we don't need to just wonder what effect Elon Musk being the CEO could have. We can take a look at the environments of Tesla and SpaceX, and we can look at all the allegations of baked in institutional racism that gets, black employees are put on the jobs that white employees don't want to do, according to them. People literally using racial slurs is papered over. They don't care. This is not about like millennial employees needlessly bringing up politics. Workers are using the N-word and no discipline happens as a result of it. Like, he is individually sexually harassing people, allegedly. And there is a culture of sexual harassment there that nothing is done about because he doesn't care. So these are not just, this is not just a culture war of Gen Z or something. This has been baked into his previous corporations, and people are worried that Twitter could move in that direction. So I understand their concerns. And on the free speech thing, like somebody leaked some of the Twitter employees' reactions, which you can question whether that's a good thing or not. But the fact that Elon Musk, we jump ahead of this Benny Johnson tweet, Elon Musk responds to it. That is designed to chill potential criticism coming from his employees. He didn't need to respond to that. What CEO would? It's he doesn't like the criticism and he wants to scare them. In the same way that we're not going to have time to go over all of this, but some employees at SpaceX drafted a letter that was criticizing Elon Musk and the culture there, which, as we've said, has literally led to lawsuits. They fired those people who were exercising their free speech. Again, the attachment to free speech, it's not an ideological thing. It is not an honest thing. They like some speech and they don't like other speech. And for the speech they don't like, sometimes he'll merely be offended. Sometimes he'll tweet in response. Sometimes you'll lose your job. He responds with the full range of potential responses in the way that literally everyone does. The difference is that he pretends to have at his very core a concrete attachment to the concept of free speech that never seems to manifest when the speech is inconvenient to him.
Yep.
Also, he's being sued over Dogecoin. So just bear that in mind. It's worth basically nothing. He promoted it, probably made tens of billions of dollars, and then lots of people lost all their money. So,
and that's the thing. Fun. They yell at the left for like saying Elon Musk is a douchebag. It's like he's proudly a douchebag. But what I'm talking about is he embodies every ounce of corruption that you say you hate in other Silicon Valley billionaires. He's worse. He's like a Dogecoin speculator. Like, he knows what he's doing. He's manipulating markets.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, and when we point out that he's a douchebag, I'm not saying he's gonna get fired for being a douchebag or whatever. I want people to be better. I want them to choose better role models, better, like literally, like people worship him. And I think that that's incredibly pathetic. And maybe it's what people say about Trump as a candidate. Like, maybe people who aren't that intelligent like the idea that their leaders are some of the stupidest people in the world, because then they feel better about their own state. Maybe looking up to people whose only characteristic is that they're an a-hole makes them feel like, well, I don't have to be any better. The richest people in the country, the most successful people in the country are a-holes. Why would I ever have to improve? I don't know.
It's like, what if I told you, you populists and every man on the right and every woman and everyone on the right, what if I told you that in your, like, I agree with your populism generally, but why is it that your leaders that you get to solve the problems of billionaires being in charge are all billionaire, are all super rich elites? Like, the people in charge of your movement right now are Donald Trump, a billionaire, Elon Musk, a gajillionaire, and Tucker Carlson, who I'm surprised he can talk based on how deep down his throat his silver spoon's been since he was a kid.
Yeah, he's a literal heir. Donald Trump has a golden toilet, and Elon Musk was born inside of an emerald mine or whatever. Like, again, everything they say, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything.
Led anyway, about by the nose as asses it. Are.
Yes, I'm assuming that's Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Definitely got to be Shakespeare. Anyway, with that said, we're going to take the second break. We come back. There's a GOP congressional candidate who, man, this guy is a real piece of work. We're going to play some of the video for you after this. We're so off the rails.
Sorry.
Okay, with that, we're going to ground things back into the realm of the real and rational and good, starting with this video of Carl Paladino.
I don't think of myself in any way as a racist. Okay, I go out there and I've been fighting for a few years now for 34,000 kids in our school district. I can't get the black leadership to adopt policies that would help those kids. I mean, basic logic, because the black people deserve better. They shouldn't be held captive in our inner cities. They shouldn't be held hungry and dumb. Okay, so as to provide a base for the Democratic Party. That's what's been going on. You can't teach them differently because they've been so conditioned to think that way. And that is so, so wrong. And I'll fight.
So that is congressional candidate Carl Paladino, a Republican, who said that years ago. It's a few years back when he was running for a different office. He said what you just heard in response to allegations that he had said racist things. And he believed that he had not. And so he defended himself by saying a bunch of stuff that I think you could make a case sounds pretty racist about black people in the inner city being kept dumb and hungry. Now, he will respond in saying, well, we'll get to his response actually. He says, it's not surprising that CNN, who surfaced the video, is once again taking my comments out of context. I just provided the context, by the way. Democrat policies have failed black voters and taken them for granted, which is why Republicans have a historic opportunity to win huge this November. I am proud of the work I did for Buffalo schools, turning around an underperforming district and investing resources in predominantly African-American areas. So here's the thing, two things. First thing is, he has said way more racist things, which we're going to get to in just a moment. Two, his defense will be, no, I'm not saying they're dumb and hungry, or that if they are dumb and hungry, that that's their natural state. All I'm saying is that black leaders who are Democrats have made them dumb and hungry, and I would love to save them, but it's difficult because you can't teach them anything because they've been brainwashed. And there, I don't know if he's talking about the leaders or the people or everyone. Look, this could have been more explicitly racist, I suppose. But even with his defense, it is clear that he thinks of this community in some ways that are fundamentally different in how he might think about some other communities. So, Brad, I want your thoughts, bearing in mind that we're going to get to even more explicitly racist things coming up in just a bit.
This is just, it's just fun to watch how warped the mind is, but then sadly having to compare it to other rhetoric from people who are just better at it than this guy. Like, this is not too dissimilar from the direct messages of Tucker Carlson on The Daily, but that guy's just better at propaganda. That guy's better at convincing you that if you're not doing well and you're on team A, then you would do better, obviously, on team B, because that's the only other team in town. And there's a bunch of dumb people taking that bait on the left and are like, yeah, sure, fine. Not realizing that the right is basically trying to convince you to go out of the frying pan and into the fryer. But it's even, you know, you're not in a frying pan right now. But rather than fix the team you're on and try to get them to do better at something they're doing fine at or not as great now, versus a party whose entire goal is to pay you less for your job and make it so that you have to stick with it or else you won't have insurance for your health issues and you will either die or go broke. That is pretty much what the right wing's trying to do.
I want to make sure that we get to this because I previewed it and it's so crazy. So Paladino, again, congressional candidate and New York congressional candidate, one of the areas where supposedly the Republicans are still a little bit more reasonable. He said that he would like to see Michelle Obama, quote, return to being a male and let loose in the outback of Zimbabwe where she lives comfortably in a cave with Maxie the gorilla. And that he hoped Barack Obama would die of mad cow disease after having sex with a cow.
Which that's I'm not sure how you get mad cow disease. It's don't a prion. It's a certain type of cell that you can't even cook out. So unless if you're going down on a cow's spine, maybe.
No.
Eating spine.
I don't want to talk about the Barack Obama part of this anymore. We're going to return to the Michelle Obama. So there are two aspects to that. One is the insane conspiracy theory that the right had that she was formerly a man. I don't understand how that's supposed to work. I don't know how that's like what they think, like Sasha and Malia. I don't understand how any of that's supposed to work, except that they apparently see like an assertive black woman and think, well, she must have been a man at some point. That was their response. So there's obviously racism in that. There's also a healthy dose of misogyny in that. A weird transphobia too. Like if he could just fit a bit of like that she formerly was a Muslim man, it would really be just everything for the right in one conspiracy theory. But anyway, for her to go back to Zimbabwe and live with a gorilla, it might be possible to generate a more racist sentence than that. But I don't think Carl Paladino has the mental faculties to do it. I think with what he's got, He rolled a critical success and he maxed out on that's the best racism he could come up with. And so I don't care about your dumb and hungry comment, honestly, at the end of the day, because it is very clear what you think.
Right. Like I was going to do a whole thing about how dumb means you're voiceless. And that's literally their whole plan is to disenfranchise these very people. Right. And give and get rid of their voice. But you don't need to do it. He's talking like crazy racist tropes that are, there's no way around it. And just something that when watching Tucker Carlson, which I'm sure we all do, he takes that as a challenge whenever possible. Like he you'll see him, he'll be like, I wonder if I can take this thing I've been working on, which is why does the left always call us racist? And then see if I'm good enough at rhetoric where I can get Carl Paladino out of jail for saying that Michelle Obama needs to go back to being a male and get loose in the outback of Zimbabwe. You're mixing continents. But like that's where that's where they are. That's where they're at on the right. Madness. I just would rather not be with them.
This is a late in the clip twist. He might have done something that's arguably worse than the Maxie the Gorilla thing. So back in 20, I don't know exactly, the tweet was in 2020, May of 2020. A Twitter user by the name of Debbie had tweeted out a quote from Katie Johnson, who's one of the many women who has alleged that Donald Trump sexually assaulted her, saying during the course of this savage sexual assault, I loudly pleaded with defendant Trump to stop, but he did not. Defendant Trump responded to my pleas by violently striking me in the face with his open hand and screaming that he would do whatever he wanted. To which Carl Palladino responded, Katie, get a life. You probably enjoyed the slap at the time. Which is, like, I can't even process how awful that is in so many different ways. But I feel the need, and I know that this says something about me. He responded to Katie. Debbie tweeted it. It was a quote from Katie. It's like guys who respond to like an account that manages an Insta model thinking that she's, it's not her, you idiot. But even if it was, and I understand it's a tangent, to say that the woman wanted to be physically assaulted in addition to the sexual assault is utter madness. And I will remind you again, not only is he a current congressional candidate, he also was endorsed by Elise Stefanik. And so far, none of them are distancing themselves from him. They were asked to return money he'd given. They're not doing that. This is who they like.
So good, because they don't care. They don't actually care about anything. It is such a dirt devil that they pop up and they just, so you can't see, you're disoriented. It's disgusting all at once in every possible direction. What they know is that they can, I don't know, in social media, it gives you the illusion that you are seeing more of the world, so that you get the impression that everything you see, that's more of what the world is. But it does the absolute opposite. It makes you see less. It makes you create an illusion of a world of people just like you and gives you the false impression that everyone's that way. But the more you do that, the more if you have like manipulators, expert manipulators like you do on the right, they can take advantage of that and build a bigger coalition. And that's what they're doing piece by piece. And while the left wing just has nothing, is nothing, nothing, nothing.
Yeah. I know that I've said this about Marjorie Greene, about in our election coverage, the fact that Paul LePage is the nominee for governor in Maine again on the Republican side. Like, it's an entire state with a bunch of people in it, and this is the best they can do. Add Carl Palladino to that list. I mean, unless you think that, no, this is actually like fairly standard. Like, if you were to sample, 100 potential replacements for him as a nominee, most would have comments like this. I don't want to believe that's true. I don't think that that's true. I don't think that most people are this bad. I think that maybe even worse, we are a particularly sick society in that it's not just that most of us aren't great, it's that we elevate the worst of us. And for some reason, this is who, I'm not saying that in New York they're picking him for this reason, but there's certainly been a lot of candidates on the Republican side that seem to have been chosen purely because they're the worst. Marjorie Greene, there's nothing to her candidacy initially, other than the fact that she spread terrible conspiracy theories. She had no history, no political experience, nothing. They lift her up because of her insane vlogs. That's it. And Carl Palladino, is he going to have to step down over this? I mean, probably not. This is horrendously misogynistic and racist things. And we'll have to see if they even distance themselves. Why would they at this point? They stuck to Trump and it hasn't necessarily hurt them. So we'll see with Palladino.
A lot of that is like fundamentals of campaigning in smaller races. Like, what's the average person do? The average person knows who's running for president. They know maybe their senator, they know maybe their mayor. But in all of these situations with the smaller races, the average person doesn't. So you get the non-average person, which on the left frequently is activists and people who are trying to make a positive difference. And the center of that party is like, no. But on the right, it's psychopaths like Marjorie Taylor Greene who are able to get like a crazy mailing list of conspiracy theorists together and activate them at the polls in a primary.
Yeah. Okay, we're out of time in our first hour. Thank you everyone on the linear platforms or on the podcast for watching. Do appreciate that. If you're listening to the podcast, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It's very helpful and I love reading those comments. I'm gonna start reading some more on air. For those of you watching the full show, though, we are going to come back with the Ted Cruz story. We're going to take just a quick little break, but we'll be talking about lesbian toys soon enough. Don't you worry about that. We'll see you in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.